Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
You give me that funny feeling in my tummy.
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone, and I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and he said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it, I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I call Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there, another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I'd have had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken didn't wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This is Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, You don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened.
The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord.
And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because the Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at the Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything that you have to. Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me. Show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you.
But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I will be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, welcome to another installment of DIY Housing TV. And for people who haven't been around earlier this week, this past weekend, the name that we've been going by on here for the last 9 years has been It's My House. But I changed the name to DIY Housing TV. Which stands for Do-It-Yourself Housing Television, and because we're getting ready to add a video element to it, a visual element to it, The mission is one sentence long. The mission statement is one sentence long. And essentially, our mission is basically to teach people how to build their own off-grid house using social capital. And social capital replaces banks. Matter of fact, social capital, if you look at the history of how anything was built, particularly housing-wise, in the history of man, since before the pyramids were built till today, the majority of homes were built using social capital, which the Amish still do it today, the Mennonites still do it today. There's a lot of people that still do it today. Many of your tiny houses or just a regular size house, you still have people that use social capital, friends and relatives to build. Although most people in our modern times, they used to, getting a bank loan or to buy a house. Nowadays, more people, generally speaking, particularly in Western countries, their mindset is on buying a house versus they don't even think about building. But it's my belief that you come out dramatically a lot less expensive if you learn how to build one yourself or get together with people that know how to build and then learn from them. So thus the name change, DIY, which stands for Do-It-Yourself Housing Television, because we'll be doing live builds where you can actually see us build, or you might be building so we can see each other, and then, we can solve problems or come up with whatever we need in real time when we're building. Now this week we've had Chris Collins on and other guests. We've been covering how we're getting organized so we can do these live builds. And so today we're going to pick back up with Chris and other people that call in during our stream, which is 619-768-2945. But before we go into that, our jump-off title, subtopic, which is part of our, we always start off with some motivation, which is, that's why I play the Steve Harvey stuff and all that, face sheet and all that. Don't look at the Lions. And this is going to be, different people are homeless for different reasons. Different people lose their homes to foreclosure for different reasons or face eviction for different reasons or have, it could be any kind of difficulty. It doesn't even have to be dealing with housing at all for different reasons. So I'll share with you a little experience that I had, basically through a phone call yesterday. The phone call I was on, and it's going to relate to what we're talking about today and tomorrow and really for the rest of the year. But I was on I ran across a video some hours early, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning yesterday. This is before the call that I was on yesterday morning. Dealing with the story in the Bible, Daniel and the Lions. Daniel in the Lion's Den, which if you're a student of the Bible or any holy book, a lot of it's written in allegory and symbology. So let me go to the and before we go to our phone lines, let me go to the phone call I was on yesterday. I have a legal situation with a house I own in another part of the country. So I was on, a phone call where, it was a court. I mean, nowadays, cause I would have to fly 1,000 miles or 900 miles to get to this court appearance. But now, since the pandemic, a lot of courts around the country, although they're back open, most of them. You attend court via a conference call. So, which is great for me because I don't have to travel 900 miles one way, go to a court hearing, which is like 5 minutes or less than 10 minutes. I can't even imagine we were on that call. When I was on for my case, if we weren't for 5 minutes, it was barely five. Usually their case is called, you know, so, and there was one case I lucked out. My case was the second case called, but there was a case on before me. So, you know, I got to listen in on it. Because even if I was there in person, you know, if there are other cases to be called, you know, you get to listen to other people's cases before your case is called. Anyway, so there was one case that was called before mine. And it was the case, this particular person's case was ongoing for the last six consecutive years. We've been doing this in my house for nine, but his case has been going for six consecutive years, this particular person's. So the long story short of it, guy is behind on his property taxes, and he owes $300,000. So some kind of way, he has managed foreclosure of this particular property for six consecutive years. Now, we're going to have a whole podcast series on it at a later time. And he was representing himself pro se. That means without the lawyer. So kudos to him for that. Typically, to carry a lawyer in the court, even if it's on the phone, you know, you can pay, at least in this particular housing market, $2,000 for an hour. Okay. So he was representing himself pro se. We're going to bring Warren Houston back on probably on later, not this today, but so you can learn some basics on how to represent yourself pro se, because it can save you a bunch of money. Anyway, so he managed to do that, and I was taking notes with pen and paper. You know, I always do that when I'm sitting in on a court proceeding. So anyway, $300,000. So the judge could have said, it's over with, because the plaintiff, they made a motion for judgment for foreclosure, which means he would lose his right of redemption and be foreclosed on. But that didn't happen. I thought it was going to happen, but it didn't happen. This guy, regular citizen, Joe Blow, Joe Average. So he said the right things where the judge said, well, what we'll do is this. Is because there are other cases going on, you know, on the docket. Pandemic, everybody cases is like backed up. So the judge said, well, look, we'll give you $300,000. The judge said, we'll revisit this case on May the 3rd of this year. So he's got the rest of this month of March, all of April, and then May 3rd. You know, if he hasn't come up with $300,000 or a significant chunk out of that, he'll be foreclosed on after 6 years. All right. So that got me to thinking, because my situation has nowhere near that amount of money. So I got to think about the audio that I, or the video that I ran across on YouTube, and it was titled, Don't Focus on Your Problems. Focus on a higher power. Don't focus on your problems. And you play the video, and the video broke down Daniel in the lion's den. So the lions, okay, the lions are essentially or symbolic negative situation or intimidating situation that you might be faced with in life. So the way I interpreted this guy's situation is, okay, his lions were a tax bill. His original tax bill was nowhere near $300,000, particularly if you go back 6 years, all right? His original tax bill could have been under $30,000, all right? But if you give attention to the lions in your life, in other words, the tax bill could be intimidating you, you're talking to the wrong people, getting advice from the wrong people, and then that those lions beget other lions, and they multiply, and now he's faced with $300,000 tax bill. But the judge threw him a lifesaver. Okay, he's gotten to May 3rd, this is after 6 years now, to come up with $300,000. So now let's go back to Daniel and Lion's Den. If you go back and read that, and you know, you can be a stone-cold atheist on this. If you look at in the scrolling marquee that I have here on Blog Talk Radio, we have, you know, three or four pictures of Daniel, and you'll see at least two of those pictures. Daniel is staring out of the picture. He's staring out of the window in the pictures. And then he's staring up. Now, it's symbolic of him. He's looking to a higher power. He's looking to God. Whatever your higher power, whatever you want to call it, positive thinking, God, Allah, Buddha, nature, whatever. He's looking up for positive and creative solutions. And he's totally not paying attention to these lions that he's in the den with. And mind you, on the floor of this den where Daniel's in there alone with no weapons. And Daniel was in there originally, he was afraid. Now, he wasn't all big and bold and bodacious when he was first thrown into the den with the lions. He was afraid. I mean, he saw evidence, human bones of, you know, these carcasses, you know, that were picked clean by these lions. But as he ignored the lions, looked out the window and looked up and ignored the lions, which represent negativity and toxicity and all this, you know, he became cool, calm, and collected. He even took a nap, fell asleep and took a nap around all these lions in the den. So once again, now the Bible and the Torah and all these holy books, they're written in heavy symbology and allegory. All right. So I got to think about this dude's situation. All right. He's got $300,000 due by May 3rd of this year. And it's the middle of, March 22nd. So now, according to what I heard, you know, he told the judge and the plaintiff's lawyer, you know, I got this lined up, so, you know, hopefully it'll work out for him. But I was thinking, you know what, now, I said, you know what, and I'm glad I said, well, let me look at my situation and some other people I know. There's a guy, I think his name is Tom Saray. He owns a company called Tough Shed. and his sheds are available for sale at many of your Home Depots, Lowe's, and Menards, and other places like that around the United States. Saray started, he built his first shed out of his garage or backyard in his house. Just one. Last July, June or July, I think it was last July, he had built, now he didn't, he partnered up with other people. He built, through his company Tough Shed, 10,000 sheds in a month. Now multiply 10,000 times any figure that you want. All right. It equals a lot of money. So I'm looking at, well, and there are other people like Tom Saray. So, you know, because we played on here before, the cupcake lady, what's her name? Her name's right on tip of my tongue. But the cupcake lady out of New Orleans and Nashville now, the cupcake lady out of New Orleans, her name of her company is called the Cupcake Collection. You can look up her website online, the Cupcake Collection. And her, she was facing foreclosure. She's a mother of seven kids. And the day that her life turned around, when she looked away from the lions in her life. The lions in her life at the time was she was facing foreclosure. She has seven children to feed, and herself and her husband. She only had a $5 budget to feed the kids that day. Her electricity, her lights were out, and the water had been shut off. Those were her lions. But then she looked up, and somebody knocked on the door. It was a real estate agent that said, Francois is her last name. The cupcake lady's Francois, that's her last name. But I'm trying to remember her first name, but let's just go with the cupcake lady. Anyway, the cupcake lady, a real estate agent came knocking on her door and said, look, you know those cupcakes that you made and passed around the neighborhood? I got an open house today, this afternoon. If you whip me up a batch of those cupcakes, I'll pay you $1 per cupcake. So, Mignon. Mignon Francois, that's her name, the cupcake lady. Black woman out of New Orleans. Mignon, all she had was her grandmother's recipe for cupcakes. But she looked up and took her last $5 was supposed to feed those seven kids. But a lot of times they didn't eat until 10 o'clock at night. So she took the $5. I'm going to try to get on this podcast. Took the $5, went to the I don't know where she went. I'm just speculating. She went to Dollar General, Family Dollar. She took the $5 in her grandmother's recipe and had that was enough. I don't know. She probably went to a neighbor's house using social capital, friends and relatives. She baked 61 cupcakes. She called the real estate agent up, and she took grandma's recipe for cupcakes and $5 and turned it into $60 that day. She took $5 out and fed the kids. By the end of the week, she turned that $60 into $600. As the story went on, she eventually made enough money to save the house and prevent the house from being foreclosed on. She still owns the house today and is still in operation making cupcakes in New Orleans, Louisiana, and a location in Nashville, Tennessee. And, you know, she's created generational wealth. Of course, the lights got cut back on, the water got cut back on, but it happened because she stopped looking at the lions that were in her life. So the information that we're putting out that Chris Collins and other people that will be calling in are giving, you might hear something on here that you might be able to get rid of the lions in your life if you just take information and act on it. There's a video that I ran across yesterday, this guy out of El Cajon, California. And he has a church here in El Cajon. And I called him yesterday. I'm going to try to get him on here. But somebody in the congregation came up with sleeping cabins. The sleeping cabins are basically little structures. Matter of fact, if you go on YouTube and just punch in sleeping cabins, Reverend Slade or Pastor Slade, the video or two will pop up. But he's got about six of them. So everything starts with one. So now building a tiny house, building a sleeping cabin, building a shed, or even cupcakes might not be your thing. But there's something in your life, if you just sit down and get quiet and think about it, which, like Daniel, you'll forget about the lions. And you know what? Your lions will not the lions in your life will become a non-factor if you just refocus and reframe your mindset on what you can produce to take you to the next level. So, thus, that's my rant for today. Don't look at your lions. Ignore them, reframe, and you know, move on to a higher power. Anyway, now, so let's get to, let's go to the phone lines here where we'll get to the technical stuff where we're talking about sleeping cabins, what we can do, and what we need to organize geographically to do this, because essentially now we're doing here with this live stream of podcasts, but what we need to talk about here, and we've been talking about this week, is we need to organize offline and then bring our smartphones out, so when we're building whatever we're going to be building, in our case we'll be doing tiny houses and sleeping cabins and some other stuff we'll be building, but because that's where the ball is today. People seeing as believing. So everybody now has the technology, no matter where you are on the planet, where we can interact and do a live stream where we can build and talk and solve problems in real time. So we got the technology, so we may as well use it. All right, so anyway, enough of my rant for today. I'm going to the phone lines here. And let's go to 309. Area code, good morning, Chris, if you're there.
Yes, good morning, L.A.
Okay, I'm done with my rant for today. We talked about Appendix Q yesterday, which is which gives, you know, a lot of leeway for people can do tiny houses virtually anywhere in the United States. If now, not now, very soon, you know, some people probably have to educate their local code enforcement people on it, but it's on the books, so. Anyway, your thoughts for this morning and building. Oh, his call dropped, so I guess he'll be calling back. So while we're waiting for Chris to call back in, let's take another caller. Area code 410, your mic is open.
Peace
and blessings to you, too.
Man, I'm telling you, I'm so excited. I met the beautiful lady, Miss V. the other day at the land in Orlando.
Right.
So I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, she did a live stream on that on Facebook, so I got to see some of that. So I was pretty impressed with her and whatnot.
Man, we are so excited about this project. And again, right up the street is the J-Max flea market, where we have total control. We just bringing in a new furniture store. So all the models that we have will be modeled. We'll have furniture in those models.
Okay.
So people can come and see and buy, and at very affordable, too.
Great.
So I'm so excited.
Great. Sorry. Now, explain this. Or first thing, for the new people that didn't hear you a couple of days ago, it's, you know, I know your name, but share people what your name is and then what do you do, and then get more details about the flea market.
All right. My name is Anthony Whitfield. I'm originally out of Baltimore, Maryland, but I live in Orlando, Florida, worked in Miami, Jacksonville, all throughout. I was a community activist for many years with my food bank and just ready to bless people, understanding and trying to go after government money so they can do what they're supposed to do. I finally realized this is not where it's at. Going to rallies and everybody jumping up and down and saying, yes, 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 and no, 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 that's not where it's at. So I took a hiatus, a sabbatical. And now where we at with the sabbatical is God has blessed us and opened up doors for us to have land, 5 acres of land, to build manufacturing on, a full J-Max flea market where we're able to have an IKEA in there. So, you know, you can have furniture, you can have outdoor, you can have food markets, you can have everything inside of there. But the good part about it is on the outside, it's on a 4-lane highway where thousands of cars drive by, where we put our models at.
Now, is that on I-4 or near I-4?
It's right off of I-4. Actually, okay. If you take I-4, the 408, two exits down, Hiawassee Road, just
right.
Go that, take that west, go up, and you'll see it's on the corner.
Okay, all right.
So we're all right,
so
off of I-4.
Right now, the video I saw the other day with you in it, that's on the church grounds. What was what, 3 to 5 acres of land?
Yes, sir. The total complex is 5 acres of land. They're utilizing 1 acre of land in the middle, and so the whole back section of 3 acres is available for us to utilize right now.
Okay. All right, now, so, and you'll be doing what, container home conversion?
Well, when you got to remember this. When I say container homes is just one product.
Okay.
Container homes is just one product. Steel framing is another product. 3D modeling, 3D building is another product. We have all those products that we're willing to train people right now.
Okay. All right. Okay, so you'll be doing training at that location. And then...
Yes, sir.
The flea market is where you'll be selling products.
Yes, sir. Displaying it.
Displaying it. Okay.
And it's,
all right.
Yes, sir. And it's less than a half a mile away.
All right.
So
well,
I can pick
that sounds,
yep. It's less than a half mile
away. That sounds
like
very ordinary.
Yep. We can drop them off every day and bring them back every day. Have events all night long because it comes with a stage. Agriculture. We want to have an agriculture model. We're growing real food out of it.
Right.
We want to definitely have a food truck. We definitely want to have a medical center. Right, where people come in and get their blood pressure checked, mammograms, prostate.
Right.
Check your prostate right away. You know, a lot of the great things that we have ability of by utilizing building.
Right. Right. Okay, well, that's now, now, as far as training goes, now, what do you have set up, scheduled for, you know, now or in the near future?
Oh, no, we're talking about starting Monday.
Oh, okay.
We want to start Monday, this Monday coming up, actually, for production, for, you know, have the video going. The grass cutting down, everything. Starting this Monday.
Got it. Got it. Okay, well, that sounds organized. Sounds very organized.
Oh, yes, sir. We are definitely ready to go.
Okay, well, you got the location where you can build, train, and then a short distance away, the flea market, which is a good thing.
Yes, sir, okay. Which is on a major highway. Pioneers and
right.
Silver Star. Thousands of cars ride by. All different types of nationalities, all different type of economic development, people different economic status. But the key is working together, bringing my family and friends
right.
together to help to get everything going.
Right. Right. Okay, well. That's all high marks. Now, you're also doing stuff in Miami as well, right?
Yes, sir. Most definitely. We built our first model house in Miami. Not our first one, should I say, but we built a model pod in Miami, 640 square feet. It took us 2 days to do it. It came in as a box.
Right.
We unloaded the box, didn't know anything about it, and we built it. Full roof,
right.
full electric, full everything in 2 days.
Okay.
And that's working
right.
with people that has no knowledge, with no knowledge of construction.
Right. Right. Okay, excellent, excellent. I think we got Chris back. Hold it.
Hey, Mr. Chris.
His call dropped. But he's back. Wait a minute. Let me open up his mic. Wait a minute. Oh, here we go. Okay. Chris, your mic is open.
Hey, Mr. Chris.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
I mean, we can hear you now. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. I dropped off the call. I just wanted to make sure my phone would come back on. yes, sir. Good morning. Good morning, Anthony. I'm excited about what you got going there and what we're getting ready to go. Had a conversation with him prior to the show here. So one of the things that we discussed was having something for us to be able to show up with material and build on. And he said he's got it. So I think this would be a direction for the plan of something for the we can either, you know, get the church group to be involved or just a youth group or a community group. I'd like to see them from 8 to 80. That would be an amazing little build team.
Right.
The good part about it is that's who we have on our team. That's who we have on our team. If you look at the video that we sent to you, that's a young man. That's a young man that is so inspired about doing right and helping in our community. Those are the ones we want to influence. Those are the ones that, because they have the passion, we want to give them the opportunity to make things work. And of course, our senior citizens, they're heart of my life. You know, those are the ones that's going to be sitting there and just telling us, you know, enjoying themselves, but at the same time making phone calls, talking to their friends and families. You know, and plain and simple, telling that, you know, that the people in their church, hey, your daughter just came home. She don't have no place to live. Come talk to us. Your daughters just came home. They paying $2,200 a month for a two-bedroom house. Come talk to us. Come on over and see us at the Silver Star Community Church. That's what
you
we
know,
want.
That was my favorite part, Anthony. When any projects that I've done with kids, it's been how excited they get, how amazed they get, and how confident they get when they turn around and look at you and say, can I do it again? And, you know, kids don't necessarily want to work. The difference is if you can make work fun, if you can make work rewarding and not just monetary, this is where the change starts to begin, and it changes everything that the human race has to end. You know, we're looking at it at you got to go in blood, sweat, and tears to make something happen. And these children haven't even broke a sweat, but they have shed some tears. And they've caused tears to be shed. And that emotion needs to be unlocked and into the community. And that's what I look forward to coming in and actually doing everything that the church goes in and talks about and how we're supposed to be, show up and be what that book says we should be or what you should be, just as being humanity. You know, we're human beings. It's time for us to start being human. And I look forward to this ignition.
All right. All right, well, Monday. Now, Anthony, what do you have lined up for Monday now? Because you said you guys are starting Monday. Time, place,
Monday
details.
Yes, sir. Monday, we'll be cleaning out all the bushes that you saw. We're cleaning out the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All that be done by Monday. Ready to be able to bring in the containers. But like Mr. Collins said, he's coming down with material also.
All
so
right.
This is going to be a perfect situation.
Now, Chris, with the metal, the machine, or how does that work? You bringing the machine down, or is the machine already here, or what? That, you know, that makes the parts, you know, like the walls or whatever, you know. If Chris is there.
Oh, yeah, no, I thought you was asking Anthony the question. I'm sorry. All right,
oh, well,
so
whoever.
Ask me. No, that's fine. Ask that question one more time. I've got an answer to it.
Oh, no, I was wondering, you know, the machine that you're talking about that can, you know, make some, you know, where you manufacture the parts of a house, you know, like the walls, roof, and stuff like that.
Yes.
Will you have a machine here or is the machine already there?
No, the machine will stay at the factory. I'm just going to bring material. And I'm going to get the measurements. Here's the beautiful thing that's about to happen. I'm going to show you what it takes totally on the inside of this, what me and Anthony are about to do. There's going to be a comparison made. Now, if you're looking for something that, you know, somebody might set an explosion off outside your house, you know, we want you to build as strong as you can. So we want to show the marriage of the materials on how it happens. But when you do a container home, you still frame in the inside so you can wire it and plumb it and do everything that you need to do. And to hang an interior on it so that it looks like a finished home. But on the outside of it, you have to do the same thing and attach something so that you can change the visual of what you're seeing, or you're going to continue to look at the container. Now, what we're going to do is I'm going to bring down material that's going to make a container. So you're going to see the amount of material it takes to frame in a container And then you're going to see the amount of material it takes to frame something the same size as that container. And then we're going to look and see the comparisons and show what you can and what you can do. You can do either one.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. So we're going to give that option. There's going to be a demonstration of the two, because regardless, you still have to frame the container. I'm saying, why not just go ahead and frame the shape of a container? And that eliminates a lot of situation.
Okay. All right. Well, we're looking forward to all of that and whatnot. I imagine eventually you'll organize an assembly line and you'll be cranking out so many per day.
Correct.
Anthony, that flea market, how often is that flea market open? Is it weekends or is it open every day?
It's open from Tuesday to Sunday. Only day we close is on Monday.
Okay, well, that's a good place to I went to some flea market. It wasn't that one. In Central Florida, and they had pretty good traffic.
Yes, sir. Our goal is to bring the traffic in, bring something different to the table. So by utilizing the parking lot and inside, it's going to be perfect. And of course, we're working on the kids' zone, so the kids can go and play in their zone while the parents are picking out their furniture and designing their house.
Okay. Very innovative. Very innovative. Let me ask you this. Now, you say you're originally from Baltimore. So why Florida versus Baltimore?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And you will understand this totally. Mindset.
Yeah.
The mindset.
I understand that.
I mean, there's only one word to say for it. It's mindset. Baltimore, anybody that's never been to Baltimore, we have nothing but row houses. You walk out your house, you have a batted house on your left, batted house on the right.
Right.
You're coming out the streets and going right into the hood. Okay? Compared to living in a country, in a country, right, where you got a house, space, house. In Baltimore and major cities, we live on top of each other.
Right.
So our mentality as a child is, I'm just grateful to have this. I can't see nothing bigger than that. That's the problem. Politics came a part of it also, working with the local politicians. Elijah Cummings was a good friend of ours. He was trying his best to make it happen before he passed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But things just happened where people fight each other and saying, what can I get from this? You know, instead of what the community can get from this.
Right.
Who is this? Who is that? I want this because it is. But if I give you this, sir, it's going to take away from the bottom line. It's going to take from us where we can't provide the real services. I don't care. I want my money up front. And that's
right.
What happened in Baltimore. That's what happened here in Florida, too. So my sabbatical that I'm taking, and I'm actually still on my sabbatical. I'm working while I'm on it, but I was on a deep sabbatical where I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything but go to the water and pray and allow God to bring people in that really has the right meaning and the right, you know, focus on life. And notice I didn't say funding. I'm not looking for everybody to fund this. I don't want people that that don't want to build for our communities. You understand what I'm saying? This is different.
Right, right.
This program here, yes, we'll bring in money because we're dealing about real estate. We can build apartment buildings, hotels. Just Google it, shipping container hotels, shipping container apartment buildings. They're already doing it. The money
right.
is going to come. This program here is based on strictly but training, getting young brothers, sisters, everybody from the inner city to change their mindset to another location. When they come to us,
I know
on the
when
land,
you said mindset, I knew exactly. You know, that it's the same thing with D.C., mindset.
Oh, man, D.C. too. I'm from Baltimore. I got married and moved to D.C. I bought a house in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's an oxymoron mm-hmm. because anybody know about that area, DMV area, D.C. and Baltimore do not get along. It's only 45
well, right.
minutes away. But
yeah, you're
you
right.
Know,
I know.
We don't mm-hmm. do nothing. Only a few of us leave Baltimore and go to D.C. to party or do anything.
Yeah.
Unless it's on
most
a class
have,
field trip.
Yeah, both cities have their high points and low points, but you're right, the mindset, because you're able to do things here that you just can't do there, like particularly D.C. Now, unless there's a part of D.C. I don't know about, I don't know where you can go inside of D.C. proper. I'm not talking about the suburbs or outside the Beltway where you can buy an acre of land.
No, you can't. You can't.
Not
everything
in
is crazy, even in a
right.
project.
And then even with I haven't kept up with them. They had – somebody had a tiny house exhibit in an alley, some alley in the Mount Pleasant neighborhood. But, you know, you couldn't occupy it. And there's a market. There's a consumer market for tiny houses in D.C., Baltimore, in every major city of the United States. But sometimes you got to go away from cities like that and then make your mark in another place back in.
Bro, that's what we're talking about. The manufacturing plant
right.
in Orlando is strictly just for that, okay? But we
right.
have land in Fort Meade, Florida right now, 42 acres of
right.
land.
Okay.
We have 127 acres of land in Crawfordville, Georgia. Nothing is keeping you from your location. You don't have
right.
to stay in your location. You can leave the city.
That's
but
true.
Our mentality, our mindset says, this is all I know. This is what I know. I go to my grandfather's church. My grandfather went to this church, so I still go to this church. They're not getting anything
mm-hmm.
out of it, but because that's what they're used to, that's where they go. Same thing with real estate, thing with life. Do you understand it takes you 2 hours from anywhere on the East Coast to get to Florida? Whether you're leaving from New York or Baltimore, 2 hours, you're in Florida. Beautiful weather.
I know. I had a squad in my D.C. house, and I sometimes would jump on a plane in Orlando to go to court for 5 or 10 minutes and then come back. A day trip.
So it's all open. People just don't want to change their mindset. But the people that do
right.
want to change their mindset and give their children a better life, that's what we want. So we're not just doing this just to build this manufacturing plant at Silver Star, which is temporary, because it's going to outgrow it. But we want it in the middle
right.
of nowhere where you got to go through back roads to get to the location.
Right.
But when you get there, everything is there. Schooling, teaching for the kids, for the youth, for the adults, dentists, everything. You name it. Our own grocery stores, growing our own food. Everything goes on these pieces
right.
of land 10 acres, 20 acres, 30 acres of land that our young brothers and sisters are sitting on that don't know that they have access to it. They just pay taxes right. on it every year. A lot of them don't pay taxes on it.
True.
But they're losing
hold
it.
Hold on, Anthony. Hold on, Anthony. We got another call here. 262. Your mic is open. 262. Mic open.
Hi.
Good
morning, everybody.
All right, we can hear you now.
How are you? Okay.
Fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I got CJ. He's listening in. He is a tradesman. I'm hoping he can get into an apprenticeship program. He's a cement mason, certified cement mason. Want to get him to the point where he can get licensed and bonded, get out here and do some work. He got his training from Job Corps, and so he's going to be working on the tiny home build project. So
my hands go up to Job Corps, man. My hands go up to Job Corps. I used to send people to Job Corps. I got over 20 people, young brothers and sisters, that I sent to Job Corps. Excellent program. Only thing with Job Corps is they just build and break down for every training classes. They don't have any training programs to build developments.
Okay.
That's
well,
it. And so Job Corps
I
is perfect.
With Job Corps, and we can add those programs to their curriculums and help out to do more. So things are going to be changing in that aspect as well.
And that's also what the apprenticeship programs are for, right? They'll be working on development projects.
Yes, and then, but it's the creating of the jobs instead of necessarily looking for the businesses to hire them.
Right.
You know how to
gotcha.
Create the businesses.
Gotcha. The economic side of it. If they don't teach in college and church school, I got you.
Sustainability yeah. side of it.
Right, right.
But, you know, so everything takes an initial jump start to get started. Even your car. If your battery's not charged up enough and it can't turn it over to get it to fire and then get the combustible products to start working, then it's not going to continue to run. But if we all work, you know, getting these little things fixed in our glitches, and that's the programs that are out there that's not, you know, they have gaps, and we just have to bridge them, and you know, look at the problem, claim the problem, and then.
Oh, man. The Blog Talk gremlins are out here. Chris was talking in his call drop, but he'll be calling back in. So anyway, we will continue on though. Oh, wait a minute.
Well,
he's
I think
back.
I'm really proud of one
Chris
young man.
Chris, go ahead, Reba.
No, one young man that went to Job Corps with this is my youngest son. I have three sons, 22, 25, and 28. And that young man was doing some mason work, and he was making some money. So, yeah, I said, well, you know, just build your team, get your flyers out. He was actually working with where I get my business cards made, a sign shop. So he's learning some things there, learning how to wrap cards. So he's open and willing. He has the assertiveness. So I think that energy was good. My sons are generally self-motivated. I think that it seems that I have enabled in such a way, but they like building things. They like working with their hands. They like being what they think is independent. But like Chris said, when it comes down to being able to go out here in the world and be the developer, you know, it makes a big difference, you know. You can build a shed, but can you build a company?
Right. Chris, your mic is open. Because you dropped off and you came back.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. Nope, you are right, Miss Rita. Or Reba. Good morning. Nice to see you, or nice to hear you.
You're and, well. And CJ said hello, by the way, you guys. Speak it up.
Now, how's that weather up in Illinois right now anyway? Of course, you two are in different states.
It's off and on. I was just in Milwaukee, and we had a couple of, maybe an inch or so of snow up there, and I'm back with a little nasty cough. So it's clearing up. So here in Chicago, it's kind of wet, cold. There were some snow flurries the other day, and then it was nice out yesterday. I think it was nothing, and then, no, it was a little bit of rain, a couple of showers here and there. And then today it's wet, cold again, so that is like some crazy weather.
Now, Chris, what's the goal that we want to hit by December? A number of buildings built in a day or what?
100 tiny homes built in one day. And I thought about this. You know, if by me going through 50 cities and building two prototypes in each of the cities, and then leaving the material there for two prototypes. Those two prototypes, if once I hit to the 50 cities, everybody in all 50 of those cities go out in that one day and build those two prototypes that were left behind. They could have more. They can continue to build them. Don't get me wrong. But on that day, just have the volunteers show up and build the two prototypes that they were given. It's a pay it forward thing across the country here. But on that day, if we get all 50 cities to build those two prototypes, we will build the 100 homes in one day. And it should turn a seven-figure day, and that being creating jobs, that creating people to prosper.
Right.
Not where it's, you know, just a total profit situation. It's a prospering situation.
All right. Well, we got location in, thanks to Anthony, in Orlando. I'm in Lakeland in Hamilton County, so that's two locations. A total of three so far. Then you got Reba up in Chicago, so that's five? Three, four? What, so anyway.
What was that?
The goal, as Chris stated, the goal that we want to hit by December is to build 100 tiny homes in a day.
Okay, nice.
All right, so Chris, repeat that for Reba again, how you have that structure.
Well, I did hear that. I heard the prototype being set up, right? I was trying to explain it to CJ as well, but I didn't hear what you were saying about Chicago. So that is awesome.
That could be one of the locations.
Yeah,
you got
awesome. And
locations.
Then I like the fact that we can.
Yeah. You got 50 boots on the ground people, and you know different geographical areas that you can do that, and that will create a seven-figure day.
Awesome.
In other words, well, let's do the math on that right now. Okay, so Chris, what do you put like the retail cost to, you know, on average? That's just something to build.
Well, if you look at the retail cost at, just say, $25,000.
Okay, $25,000.
And you did 100 of them.
100.
You'd have, You'd have
2.5 million, $2,500,000. That's a seven-figure debt. And when you create that type of synergy, that takes you to a whole nother level.
And we can do it this way. If it was a wholesale and we just did it at $10,000 packages and they're all social equity comes into effect, now it's a $1 million day and 100 people have their lives changed.
Right.
Even
one of
day.
Those is good, because if you do, like you said, if you did a wholesale, you put the wholesale at what, $10,000?
Yes.
Okay. Man, those houses would fly at that price, at the wholesale price. They would fly at that amount. Because that's something that's within touch of everyone at that price. All right,
oh,
well,
definitely.
All right, well, let's go over what we got. So Anthony Whitfield, his people, they'll be starting Monday. And now Reba up in Chicago. I got an echo there.
Pardon me? Go ahead. I'm just muted because the children are playing.
Oh, flea markets. Because I like Anthony's idea about flea markets. Are there quite a few flea markets? I'm sure they are up in Chicago metro area.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's about four in the Chicago area. With
That's all?
Do you mean for space enough to build the project?
Yeah.
Certainly, that's a great idea. Yeah, yeah. Because, of course, they have the tents out there, so.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So some tents are different sizes. Some people are just out in open space, no tent, but certainly the space is out there. One is on 127th in Alsip, Illinois. Swaparama's on 47th off of Ashland. I think that's Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's several, about four in the Chicago area.
Okay.
And then there's a space closer, 74th and Vincennes, Charles McGarry, who is a former auctioneer. He sets up his 18-wheel over there. He is with a things. He was on on the show Storage Wars, and of course he won. he sells things out there. Well, he was. His niece is out there now.
Okay.
Far from the Grand Ball.
What I want to do, because we got quite a bit of time left. What I want to do is I'm going to have to do some maneuvering now. But I'll give you guys time to do what you got to do on your end. What I want to do is I ran across a video yesterday. I want to get the audio from it, if I can find a link there, because sometimes I get audio, sometimes I can't. Because I still got to get audio of one of those songs that you mentioned, Chris. But Sleeping Cabin. And I'm going to post some pictures, and I'll tell you guys where to look at it. So it's going to take me about 5 minutes. So we're going to take a little musical interlude here. Let me get the pictures, and then let me get the audio. And then I want you to, you know, look at the pictures, listen to the audio, if I'm fortunate enough to get the right program so I can upload it. Because I want to get to, you know, the real easy project that we call it.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe. But they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away.
有多少数量？三千个是吧？三千个，赶快送过来。好，这边没有了，已经没有了。是是。But
even the supplier is dangerously low on stock.
大概因为现在生产线已经停掉了，然后我大概要赶快把它送过去哈。好的。一点钟准时安排送料。对对对。Mr.
He has found barely enough parts to last the day.
好，谢谢谢谢。好。
When he gets another urgent call.
Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year. But Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big, with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down. Unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply. And soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury.
Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomeng, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly line. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house, and we had to do it in a large scale.
Yupa's main advantage is a cheap and endless labor force, ready to work for a fraction of a Western wage. 16-year-old Mao Fen Guo left her family and came here in 2008. But Guo isn't just looking for work. She's here to escape poverty and make her mother proud. In China, many parents prefer sons to daughters.
My mother has only 2 daughters. She's always upset about that. And in order to not let her down, I must work harder and harder.
Guo is a worker in training. With about 1,000 other students, she attends Yupa's on-site trade school. To get here, she had to pass entry exams and pay Yupa tuition. Now she's enrolled in 3 years of study and hands-on training at the factory. If she does well, Guo hopes for a job at Yupa.
At the very beginning, I thought it was very hard. But now that I've gone through all this, it's easier. There's a lot to learn, but I'm still full of confidence.
Today, she and her classmates are learning everything they ever wanted to know and more about irons. To get a job, Guo must learn the ins and outs of every product line.
We're changing constantly. Last time, we were making grills. Then we changed to coffee makers, and now electric irons.
Workers on 27 production lines pump out an iron every 15 seconds, and as many as 60,000 irons a day. Production includes at least 10 separate brands for dozens of companies. With over 30 steps to assembly, iron making is intricate work, and there's no room for error. Assembly starts with a water spray unit, made up of springs, rubber, and washers. With training and practice, it snaps into the spout in seconds.
If it's not closed tight, it will leak or blow. Then it won't work properly.
Now the sprayer and spout are joined to the handle. The two parts of the water reservoir are placed in a heating machine. That melts the space between them and makes the reservoir watertight.
Welding is an important part of production. However, it will be easy as long as we follow our operational guidelines.
Next, the thermostat is attached to the base.
You need to make sure you're using the correct format before you insert the base. Using a wrong base can lead to fire. Wiring is also important. Where there is a wiring mistake, there's hidden trouble.
A plastic buffer is placed between the heating element and the handle to keep the handle and the user's hand from getting too hot. After that, the plug is welded to the back of the iron.
We're connecting the wire for the power supply.
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to...
Okay, I'm back. I couldn't get the audio that I wanted, but I was able to get three pictures. So if you go to our Facebook page, which is titled DIY Housing TV, go to Facebook, DIY Housing TV, you'll see the three pictures that I loaded up. It took me some time to do that because, you know, I'm just maneuvering on this phone. And I couldn't hear if the show was on, and I had to call back in twice and all that. So anyway, scroll down a little bit, and then you'll see what I have titled Sleeping Cabins. Sleeping Cabins, and I got three pictures there. Now, sleeping cabins, like I said, I saw a couple of videos yesterday with this pastor out in El Cajon, California. He and his congregation put together, they made six sleeping cabins, and apparently Governor Newsom would like about 1,500 of them throughout the state of, not Florida, but California. So I'm looking at that as a barometer. Now, these sleeping cabins, they have no bathroom in them, no kitchen. It's for sleeping. All right, they're relatively easy to make. You can make them in a matter of hours, but I got a picture of three of them. Two from that particular church that they started with six, and like emergency, they use them for emergencies or whatever. So, and then there's another one picture taken. There's a group out of Baltimore called Smaltimore, where they basically do the same thing, but they call their structures micro houses, okay? So I'm looking at one way that we can probably reach this goal of 100 in a day, 100 built in a day, tiny houses, sleeping cabins, whatever you want to call them, is, and that's why I love using YouTube as a barometer. You see what's happening in real time. Is reach out to some small churches, not mega churches, but small churches, reach out to them and start building a volunteer base. It'll help the church out because they can have an outreach. And they might have a homeless program already, or you know what? I'm going to tell you one thing. Homeless is one thing. I'm going to tell you what I think is needed. Because you have a lot of people out here that have jobs, and they got a roof over their head, but they're struggling to pay the rent, they're struggling to pay the mortgage, an affordable housing ministry, particularly affordable housing outreach. I haven't heard none of those yet. You know, they got stuff out here for the home, but, you know, what about the people who could be displaced but already have a place? All right. So anyway, but those structures, you know, it doesn't need time to whip them together. And I know on my end, what I'll be doing this afternoon is I'm going to reach out to about two people. One's a bishop, and he's got like two churches, over two churches himself. And then another guy I know who's, I'm going to see how the idea floats with him and then whether his pastor might be interested in it. I'll give you updates on that tomorrow. Anyway, let me go back to the phone lines real quick, because we only have a few minutes left. I took a lot of time trying to get those pictures up. But like I say, those sleeping cabins, like I say, if you go to our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV, which is our new name, and then I got three pictures up here. Of, you know, they're pretty simple. You don't need any electricity in them, or you don't need to wire them for electricity. They're basic, simple. They're for sleeping. Now, they can be pimped up for other things, but that's a, you know, you can't get any more simple than that. You can even have a sleeping cabin village if you want. So anyway, Reba, you still there?
Yes, okay, I'm still here.
Chris. Okay.
Yes,
now, did you get a chance to peek over at the those sleeping cabins?
Yeah, that was nice. You mean with the young lady who started the organization on her own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also put pictures up just a few minutes ago. Yeah, something, you know what? I think if...
Like with the Facebook?
Yeah. Now, if we... on an individual level, reach out to small churches. I think we'll probably get, because with small churches, there's dramatically less politics. The bigger the church, the more politics. And they can have, in the small church, they have maybe 5 members, but you know, you really don't have to politic with those people. You don't have to, you know, go through this secretary, that secretary, this pastor, that pastor. And there's a lot more small churches and nonprofits out here than big ones. So that's what I'll be shooting for starting today, and I'll give you guys an update tomorrow. Chris, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. So, okay. Did you get to take a look at the? I placed on the Facebook page DIY Housing TV three pictures of sleeping cabins, or what they call sleeping. Well, they can be called sleeping. They can be called anything you want to be called, but they're simple. No plumbing in them, no kitchen, or nothing like that, but they're designed to be. In one place, they call it a sleeping cabin used for emergency situations. In the other one, they call it a micro home. So it can be anything you want to call it. But
no, I'm looking at them right now.
Right. So...
yeah, and that,
it wouldn't take that long to put something like that together.
No, that unit right there is basically what those kids built, and but theirs was 10 foot tall. It was 16 feet all the way to the point of the gable, but they framed all that in 2.5 hours sitting in a parking lot.
There you go. Parking lot, 2 hours, two, three hours. Yeah, let's just start off with something like that and then go from there. And then once we televise this stuff through, our phones and everything, we'll be getting some traction.
So I thought about New Global Destiny Outreach Ministries, New Global Destiny International Outreach Ministries. Apostle Bishop Bridget Outlaw. She has a construction program within her ministry, and she's teaching a construction trade. She's also a grant writer. Got into other organizations, lots and lots of money, donations, you name it. So she actually has the resources. As far as a small church, she operates pretty much on the scale of mega churches. Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, when you say small, how many members is that? How many is small to her?
Oh, I actually don't know. I used to be a part of the ministry. It was about 2025, but consistently now, I think I see about 20 people in the ministry. So she runs a tight ship. 20. You know, I just don't. I fellowship here and there. I ran into her because she had a summer food program, and around where I purchased my first home, and she's relocated to where I had my first storefront, and that's like the Gage Park area, probably west Garfield area. So she's still doing what she does, and literally global ministry. So I certainly want to make that connect to this project.
All right, Bridget, because you mentioned her before, and I think video, well, the Facebook page.
She shows some of the
people.
Go ahead.
She doesn't come on Facebook that often, okay, but
well, no, actually, a lot.
Oh,
she may have a couple of different pages.
Okay.
She does her videos of them doing construction projects. I don't know why my internet is not working.
I'm on one of her pages now. She just posted yesterday.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you said she had about okay. What's the day? Thursday. All right. Well, whether we're dealing with a parking lot, somebody's backyard, or whatever, we got more than enough to go. So tomorrow when we're on, well, you know what, while we're here right now, let's go with resources. Now, the resources that I have, right where I'm at right now, I got a backyard, a miter saw, levels, sawzall. I got another type of saw too. Oh, circular saw. Tape measures. That's what I have here. I got a call out. I got to call him back. I got a handyman that I think his son-in-law has carpentry skills. I want to send him, these pictures that we just posted on Facebook. So, and then now that's where I'm at physically right now. And then 3 hours away from here, I got 4 acres. All right, so those are resources that I have access to. So I can either build in the backyard where I'm at, because I'm on a little bit over a quarter acre of land, and then I have a room called a Florida room where I can see the whole backyard. It's screened in and everything, so I can even work, if it's raining, in what we call the Florida room, here where I'm at. So those are resources that I have immediately right now. But I gotta recruit some helpers, and I'm working on that. Reba, what do you have resource-wise where you're at right now?
So 74th and Vincennes, Grand Ballroom parking lot, there's two, and 35th okay. and Indiana, there's a lot there, yeah.
All right. And if you guys hear a dog in the background, I'm babysitting a dog and a pig. Actually, I have my dog, then there's a pig, then there's a dog, you hear the dog. All right, so the dog's either
okay.
lonely or hungry. Let's just say,
okay.
and the feeding time for the pig, I have to feed the pig at 1 p.m., but it's only 12:36 here, so the pig is sleeping, so Spaz, that's the name of the dog. Spaz must be lonely, but I can't give Spaz attention at this time. Anyway, Chris, you there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay. Now, we know what resource we have in Orlando, and that's right, you'll be getting stuff to Orlando, right?
Yep.
All right, so with Orlando, he's got they got the 5 acres on the church grounds, and they've got at least 2 volunteers so far, based on a video I saw a couple of days ago, and a flea market. So, man, everybody's calling me at whatever time. So, well, it's quitting time anyway. I was trying to find outro music. Wait a minute. Let me find that. Damn, man, the dog's barking. People calling me. All right.
I wanted to tell you that right, your music is banging. I need a soundtrack from you, Brother LA. I think that was Gladys Knight and that second song on point.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to add more in. Like Chris recommended a song. I found one of the artists. But I got to find a YouTube program that will allow me, because some of these programs, some days they work, some days they don't. Then you don't want to get a virus on the phone and nothing like that. So I got to get Chris's, he recommended a song. Like I said, I got one of the groups and one of the versions, but I didn't get the Phil Collins. I don't think I got the Phil Collins version yet of that song. So. Yeah. Well, I gotta. I tried to do it today but it was taking too much time. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow for Friday so we can set some dates. So we got more than enough people, and we just have to work with what we got and then just start from there.
Yep.